Dingra has it now, taking on Aina. Good play by Dingra. Lovely ball, brilliant goal. Sebastien Haller has got the touch. And the man whose career was put on pause by a diagnosis of cancer just might have scored the winning goal in front of his own supporters in the Africa Cup of Nations.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Ian Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Well, it's December now. Everyone's putting up their trees, and we're all settling down for some tournament football, yeah, because AFCON starts in a couple of weeks' time. That lovely winter treat. They tried to take it away from us. They tried to put it in the summer, but oh no, 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 no. It's back. It's back in winter. Coming around the corner just to really, really piss everyone off. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to see it at the moment, are we, Terry? Because no one's picked it up, have they?
Sky have had it the last few tournaments, haven't they?
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously they don't have it this time around. Oh, man, that would be difficult to accept if it wasn't on in the UK. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
If they're assuming there are. Well, maybe Paramount Plus will come along and buy it because they're buying everything else.
Well, yeah. Yeah, because they've just picked up a lot of the European competition rights, haven't they, last week, starting in 2027. So a while yet, but yeah, maybe. Maybe. They seem to be making a move. I don't know if picking up AFCON would be the right move for them, but if you want to try out football for a little while, why not? Jan, you don't like international football at the best of times, but AFCON could potentially be removing 7 players from Sunderland's squad for about a month or so. How are you feeling about that?
Well, just to correct you slightly, it's tournament football I tend to be okay with.
Right.
It's just the qualifiers, which I ranted about at length last week. But yeah, so I knew that we were going to get hit by it, but I didn't dare look. I was kind of hiding behind the sofa, hoping it wasn't going to be as bad as I feared. But yeah, so there's at least 7 players that could go. And a lot of them are the guys we brought in over the summer and the first teamers. So not always starters, but they're in the first team squad. It's going to be really, really difficult. So I think the official start of the team's gathering is around the 10th December, which is 4 days before Sunderland play Newcastle at home, which is going to be great having half the team missing for that. So it's going to be difficult. I think there's a conversation going on between the club and the federation's concerned to see if they can be a bit more flexible and allow the players to go out after the Newcastle game, because really, it's the only game that matters in our season. And we're going to be up against it anyway. Newcastle have found their feet again, so it's going to be tough. But without a host of first-teamers, it's going to be a real struggle, yeah.
Well, we're going to talk a bit about AFCON in this episode. But before we start, we have to have a little catch-up about what we talked about last week, which was our World Cup draw. Now, if you listen to it, we picked all 48 teams, we put them into groups and everything, and unfortunately, we got it slightly wrong. We did warn you about this, because we did say that FIFA hadn't released their procedures, and they did about a day after we recorded. So, slightly annoying, but you know what FIFA are like. In fact, I was surprised it was that early. Usually it's about 2 days before the actual draw. But no, it was last week. And now the biggest difference in the draw procedure to the one that we did last week was the fact that England are going to be seeded. Yes, not only are they in pot one, but England are seeded. Because they're one of the top 4 teams in the world, along with Spain, Argentina and France, England are going to be kept apart from those sides in the draw until the semi-finals. All coming up England, isn't it, Terry?
Well, yeah. I mean, if, you know, finishing in the semi-finals is a legitimate target for England, then yeah, it is all coming up England. But I think we're all decided here that this is actually one of the only times since 1966 where we're all thinking, I think England can actually genuinely win this, and not in the kind of deluded England can genuinely win this way that happens from 1960. Well, all right, 70. We had a case in 1970. But, you know, it's Nadir in 2006 when we all thought this team's going to win the World Cup, and they were dog shit.
Yes, yes.
But this team is, I think, actually objectively good enough to win. I think non-English people are even saying that. So, yeah, bring it on. I mean, I don't mind. I mean, we've got to play these guys at some point, and we should fear no one. But, I mean, one feels that perhaps it's FIFA just saying, you know, let's get a bit of spice into these things, try and keep it for the top teams. Sounds a bit rigged, really, doesn't it?
Well,
I don't know. Is that harsh, do you think?
Slightly. I think what it is that this is all on the premise that teams from Pot 1 would win their groups. And we know from experience that this does not happen. There's always a couple of teams that just do not turn up and struggle either to get through the group or actually go out. But for the sake of the draw, they have thought, well, let's assume that all the Pot 1 teams go through. And if they do go through, then at least four of the ties in the round of 16, which is still relatively early in the tournament, will be between Pot 1 sides. So we could get some really big games in that round. And I think what they're trying to do is try to separate the best teams, give them some kind of reward. Because the only filler in Pot 1 is really the host nations, and they're pretty good this time round as well. So that's probably what it's all about. So you've still got teams like Brazil, Germany in there as well, who aren't going to be separated from you. So you could be facing those teams as early as the round of 16. So you could end up with a very, very, very tough draw. And of course, if these Pot 1 teams finish second in their group or even third in their group, then of course that all gets mixed up anyway. So, all right, it is a little bit of rigging, but I mean, who doesn't have rigging? This is any knockout competition that has seeds in it has this built into it. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to matter too much. If for the sake of our draw, the only thing that would have happened would have been France and Germany switched groups, and that would be it. That was the only thing that happened as far as the draw that we made. The other difference that came out in the procedures was the way that they treat the intercontinental playoff teams. Now, when we drew it on the same basis as they did for the Women's World Cup, and that is treating the seeded team in that playoff pathway as the nation for constraints in the draw. They've actually said that now it's all teams in that pathway are now going to be treated for constraints. So they will be even harder to try and nail down into a group. So expect some fun and games on Friday when that happens. But no one's going to really care about the draw on Friday because everyone's going to be wondering who's going to win FIFA's piss prize, aren't they? Because the inaugural piss prize is going to be handed out on Friday. And Jan, who do you think is going to get the piss prize?
I didn't realise that you pronounced the word peace as piss until now.
Oh. Oh, have I misread it?
It's a strange thing to come up with, isn't it? To come up with a peace prize when you're a football organisation. But, you know, it's all ideas are welcome. Who's going to win it? I don't want us to descend into a conversation about the President of the United States, but I would imagine they're going to give it to the President of the United States, at which point all credibility that bald FIFA guy ever had will just come tumbling down. I really hope they don't do that. The idea itself is ridiculous, so I suppose, on the other hand, why not give it to a ridiculous person? I'm never going to get allowed into America again, am I?
No. Terry, do you want to give us some opinions on the piss prize?
No, I mean, all I would say is I'll invoke an old social media meme from back in the day and say the piss tape is real. Yes, I understand from my sources, which is basically everybody, that Donald Trump will win the piss prize and it will be presented to him because he loves to turn up at these kind of things and just hang with winners. That's just the kind of guy he is. So that is all there is to say about that. It's going to be embarrassing and cringeworthy and awful to watch.
Yes, who wants to sit and watch a ball FIFA guy showering President Trump with gold?
Well, actually, there might well be plenty of people who'll pay quite a lot of money to see precisely that, Graham, but not us. We're not here for that.
No. Yes. Well, hopefully that's cleared everything up for you, listener. If you want to see how the draw should have gone, then I have written a little blog post that it is on sofpodcast.com. Click on the link for the blog. Actually, no, what am I doing? I'm really confusing things now, aren't I?
Yeah, you're making this the end of the podcast.
Yes.
You actually mean to say is, and now we're going to redo the entire fake draw beginning there. So, no. I've got my pots here ready. No? Well, hang on a second, guys. I went and I go, what? Are you saying that I've just cut up all of the...
Sorry. Hey, Terry, look, here, have a prize.
Thanks. I'll just put my gloves on before I touch it.
Oh, God.
Well, let's talk about football. Let's talk about the weekend's football. Because, Sunderland won again, didn't they?
They did. They won 3-2 at home to Bournemouth, which I didn't think was going to happen because after 15 minutes, Sunderland were 2-0 down.
Yes.
Which was annoying. But I think I mentioned after the Arsenal game, they're a bit naive, I think, sometimes in defence and had kind of rode their luck. And we certainly rode our luck in this game because there were times when Bournemouth could have put us out of sight. But they didn't. And we managed to turn it around. It must have been an incredible atmosphere to be at the Stadium of Light and see that happening. I really wish I was there. But yeah, so Enzo Lefebvre got a penalty just before half-time and then Traore and Broby got one towards the end of the game, 70th minute. So not a last gasp one that we're used to having. But a great win. And we needed it as well because our next set of fixtures are going to be daunting, to say the least. We've got Liverpool during the week away and then away at Manchester City at the weekend. And then we're at home, as I mentioned earlier, to Newcastle. So we need the points in the bag. So, I think I've mentioned this before. At this stage of the season, would I have taken Sunderland being sixth in the league on 22 points? Well, absolutely I would. So it's going to be tough for the next few weeks and because of AFCON. So, points in the bag are great and a great performance. And it's just great to be associated with the club at the moment. Love it.
Yeah. And another thing in that game, one of Bournemouth's goals scored from about 40 yards out. Now, I don't know about you guys, but are you getting a bit bored of 40-yard goals? There's just so many at the moment. I mean, there's about two a week, isn't there? I just turn on a game and everyone's having a punt from like 40 yards out. What's going on? I was happy enough with everyone scoring from set pieces, long throws, all that stuff. But now everyone, as soon as they're like on the edge of the circle in the middle of the park, well, I'm just going to have a pop on goal. I'm seeing the goalkeeper scrambling back desperately to try and stop it. Usually used to be embarrassed for goalkeepers getting lobbed like that. But I mean, I've seen so many of them now. It's just like, oh, yeah, that's just old hat, isn't it?
When you say you've seen so many, you mean you've seen two or three, maybe?
I've seen four in the last 2 weeks.
That's quite a lot.
There was the one that Scotland scored.
Shoot!
Yes, that one. Right, Kenny McLean's one. Richarlison got one against Arsenal. Maybe this is perhaps actually skewed my opinion of it slightly.
No wonder.
There was the one in the Sunderland game, wasn't there? And I think you can also count Harry Wilson's one against Tottenham as well, when the goalkeeper went out for a walk. Although that wasn't at the halfway line, it was on the touchline. And it was a beautifully struck shot. But yeah, travelled at least 40 yards to get into the goal. You wait, Terry, it's coming for you.
We kind of almost got, I mean, it wasn't exactly the same, but it was the same phenomenon. It was the goalkeeper being way too out against Strasbourg.
Yeah.
Again, we lost, annoyingly. But the goalkeeper got stranded there. And I think it was Saar who missed an absolute sitter. It wasn't from that far out by any means, but it was sufficiently far out. And I think it's symptomatic of the issue. And I think that it looks as though, along with all the other interesting tactical tweaks that we've been seeing, or even more tactical, like the change in principles in the game that we've been seeing, and maybe keepers being encouraged to press further and further and further, and it seems to be something of a thing. You know, we're almost entering the realm of rush goalie. I mean, that's probably overreacting somewhat. But I suppose when you have a generation of goalkeepers coming out now who have been trained to play football in a way that their predecessors wouldn't have been, we went through this prolonged period of players acting almost like a sweeper and having to play football and play passes and pick players. And that maybe that's what's encouraging them. And then in turn, we're seeing these mildly freakish goals, I suppose. But the thing about them is it's always tremendous technique. I mean, they're very difficult to score from there. So it's all good stuff. I don't think there's anything weird. I suspect it's a coincidence, really. But it is fun. The Richarlison one was fun because it was such a garbage goal. I mean, it was an absolute worldie. But he just turns around and walks off like saying, well, this means nothing to me because we're 4-0 down and we've been hopelessly outclassed. And it's just a shot in a million. But it is good technique. And the Scotland goal, yeah, I mean, McLean's, I mean, that's one for the ages, isn't it, really? I mean, like, that is immortality. So goals like that, they are tremendous to see. I don't know whether or not I'd want to see them every week because it would be a bit boring. But
yeah, I mean, it's going to make November's goal of the month a bit interesting, but because they're just going to be these shots flying in from miles out. You know, I'm sure we won't see any in December. Terry, you mentioned about Palace's loss there in the Conference League, and they also lost on Sunday against Man U as well, annoyingly as well.
Annoyingly.
This is the most annoying thing, isn't it, about being in Europe, which is, I'm sure you are discovering quickly, is the fact that it is difficult to juggle between playing on Thursdays and Sundays. But the annoying thing is when you lose on Thursdays and on Sundays. That really sticks in the craw, doesn't it?
It does. And now having experienced it, I know just how annoying it is. I've experienced the greatness of winning trophies. And now I'm experiencing the annoyances of the legacy of winning trophies. And that is losing a game on Thursday and then losing another game on the Sunday. Strasbourg were really, really good. And we could have scored 3 goals in the first half of that game. And I think it would have been quite a different story. But I think Strasbourg earned that win. United are terrible and were terrible, and that was annoying. I think losing Saar in the first half of the game made a really big difference. Eddie Nketiah is a very different type of player, and I don't know why we signed that guy. I'm not saying he's no good, but I am saying that he doesn't fit the profile of the squad. I don't think he's the right fit for Palace, and I don't think he's got time to try and become a good fit. But we're going to have to get used to him because Saar is now injured, and then if he's not injured, he's going off to the aforementioned and soon to be discussed AFCON. But, I mean, to let Xerxes, I mean, it was a great finish from Xerxes, but one, that guy's goal scoring record is atrocious in England, and to concede a goal scored by him is embarrassing enough. But really, although it was a nice finish, it's crappy defending, and that free kick was also crappy defending as well. And already Glasner is briefing press about how he feels that, you know, we don't have enough up front, and you know, and how he doesn't feel as if he's being backed, which is all worrying stuff because he still hasn't signed his new contract. And I, as much as I love JP Mateta because he is clearly a wonderful human being and he's a terrific number nine, it is annoying to see him spurn the kind of chances that he does. But it is a problem when you play in transition and you're playing a lot of time on the break and you're playing full pelt, absolutely full pelt. Sometimes it's not always straightforward to be ready and composed enough to take chances when they come your way. And so I don't want to be too harsh on him. But really, Palace, without peppering the United goals, had enough chances to have scored 2 or 3. And this is what I was talking about in the preview that I wrote, that, you know, their XG is respectable, more than respectable, in fact. But they just, you know, it must be frustrating for Glasner because he's creating the circumstances for them to score goals. But the players are just not putting the chances away. And we're starting to see that now, and it's starting to matter because it's December and we're playing twice a week and it's starting to really matter. But we try to be philosophical about it. We've got Burnley next and then we've got Fulham, which I would say are two moderately winnable games before we have to then play Manchester City, which will be exciting. So, yeah, fingers crossed we can turn this little mini slump around.
I watched the game and I thought when Eddie Nketiah came on, and he had that chance quite soon afterwards when he was clean through. And it almost looked like he didn't really know what to do.
No.
I recognise your frustration as an Arsenal fan because I've seen that throughout his whole career, the frustrations you get from him because you see the type of player he is and you think, yes, he's really exciting. He gets into really good positions. And when he's on it, he scores great goals. But as soon as he got through, I thought, he's never getting this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And he didn't.
Yeah, I had no doubts in my mind that he wouldn't score it. Unfortunately, you just know.
Yeah. Obviously, Palace, this is their first European campaign. But I think looking around in that Conference League group there, there's a couple of teams there that are seriously struggling with their domestic form at the same time as being in the Conference League. You look at Fiorentina, second from bottom in Serie A, Mainz nailed to the bottom of the Bundesliga as well. So I guess what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way, Terry, it could be a hell of a lot worse, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Mainz in particular just seem to be two completely different teams in Europe. And I think they've got that balance completely wrong. Palace can be relatively satisfied under the circumstances. I mean, they are 18th, and I would have, given that they're actually supposed to be favourites to win this tournament, which now seems a little bit like someone's put a little bit too much money. I think it's possible that a bunch of Palace fans got a bit too carried away with that. But I feel that Palace have probably got enough to get through to the next round of the Conference League and just be able to manage this congestion a little bit better. But that's why it's particularly frustrating that when the Man United game comes along, Man United haven't won at Selhurst since 2016.
And yeah.
That is a record you want to keep. And obviously our home record has been excellent as well. But, you know, Man United is a team that you just used to take for granted that you probably lose to. And now, for some time now, that has not been the case. And so it is annoying and irksome when it happens. I just have to get used to it. But yeah, I'm fairly sanguine about the Conference League. Obviously, you'd love them to go as far as possible. But yeah, I feel that really the priority is to re-qualify for Europe next season and have a go at the Europa League. And you feel as though, although we're not alone, Palace by any means, because it's quite congested up there. But, you know, if we can keep it together, perhaps if it's possible to bring in an extra signing in the wintertime, then we might be able to sneak, you know, a top six place if we couldn't demonstrate that we could show that kind of longevity. But obviously, yeah, at this precise moment, it is pretty much up for grabs, isn't it? There's a lot of teams up there competing for those spots. It's going to be a close season.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're going for top six, there's a side right now that are going to take some dislodging, isn't there, Jan?
Yes. Yes, we were momentarily fourth, I say momentarily, for the duration of, after the game on Saturday. So I was a bit disappointed when Sky Sports were doing their wrap-up of the weekend fixtures yesterday that we'd gone down places. I'm like, no, we haven't gone down places, we've gone up places. We've just gone down compared to yesterday. Took the shine off the moment. But yeah, six is pretty good.
Yeah, six is pretty good. But as we've said, Sunderland have got a lot of tricky games coming up. And the possibility of losing seven players for a few weeks as well over Christmas in a real time of year when you really could use all the players you have available. How does that make you feel that you're going to lose seven players to this tournament? All right, we knew that this was coming. So is that a bit of, I'd say, poor planning to actually leave yourself open to this risk?
Sunderland were signing so many players in the summer, and I would imagine that this was considered. But at the same time, getting somebody to come to a club that's just been promoted, given what's happened to the promoted clubs in the last few seasons, is going to be tough anyway. So there's maybe a bit of beggars can't be choosers. It is only a month out of the whole season, so maybe it'll be all right either side of it. You know, I'm not resentful that the AFCON's going ahead. You know, they have to do it at some point. It's just annoying as a Sunderland supporter and seeing how well we've started the season. But there's some tricky fixtures in there as well that we could do with having a full complement in. For example, Leeds is right in the middle of it just after Christmas. And come the end of the season, that could be a really, really important result were we to win it or even get a point. So yeah, it is difficult, but we've still got some good players that can still do it. And not all of those players are going to be out for the full time. I think there's a chance for some of the players that got us promoted, like Dan Neil, for example, was the club captain and relinquished that, understandably, to Granit Xhaka. You know, you couldn't have somebody who'd never been in the Premier League telling Granit Xhaka where to go and what to do. So that made sense, and he graciously relinquished that. So maybe he might get a bit of a chance to play next to the great man himself when some of these holes start popping up across the side.
Terry, the squads are due to gather on the 8th of December. As Jan said earlier, there is lots of negotiations now between clubs and confederations to try to squeeze that as much as possible. I think I've read somewhere today that Paris FC are pretty much saying that they're not going to give up any of their players until the 14th, which is just 1 week before the start of the tournament. Given the pressure on this tournament, this was meant to be a summer tournament. It got moved into the winter because of the Club World Cup. It's squeezed even more so by Champions League commitments. It's got to be done by the middle of January. So you've got a 24-team tournament being played over Christmas. They're not playing on Christmas Day. We thought they were, but they're not. They're not playing any games on Christmas Day, even though it's being played in Morocco. It seems like this is a major tournament and it's just been battered around just for lots of bigger and shinier things to go ahead, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's reflective of the economic power of the African nations and the African confederations. And FIFA bods only tend to pay attention to the African nations when it comes for re-election. I think it gives you an indication of just how much contempt that the rest of FIFA has for Africa. And I think that it's very sad that Paris FC, who I know are fairly new to the league, I think they went up this season.
Yeah.
So I can understand but why they would do that. But I mean, if you're worried about your African players, or if you're worried about losing African players to AFCON, don't sign African players or manage your squad differently. And or if you can't do that, then you just have to manage it and suck it up. I'd even say 2 weeks wasn't really enough. I mean, really, it should be. If it was a World Cup, it would be like 3 weeks, wouldn't it? So
yeah.
If I'm trying to remember how long it was in 2022, and I feel it was of the order of 3 weeks. I appreciate that the World Cup is a bigger tournament. It's the biggest tournament in the world, bar none, bar anything. Even it's bigger than the Olympics. You know, it's a massive tournament. Nevertheless, you know, this is a major international tournament, and no one can say it doesn't matter. I mean, like, we might be a little bit thinking, will it be on television? It's something that we can watch. Would it be nice if we could watch? In Africa, it's massive. It's hugely important, and it's massively important to those players as well. So it's bitterly disappointing that they don't get the opportunity to prepare for it in a way that Europeans would for their confederation tournament, and South Americans similarly. But I do appreciate, obviously, it's a crowded schedule. It's happening in the middle of the season. There are some things you just can't do anything about that. And that has always been the case. I know that they're more or less always been the case. But historically, AFCON is a New Year tournament, isn't it? Always has been.
Yeah.
I think it's always been felt to be the right time of the year to hold it because of the diverse climate in Africa. It's a vast continent. And so therefore, it's not always straightforward to host these tournaments in the summertime, but this one was due to be in the summer. That I think was a good thing. I think that it's a good thing going forward, and I hope that we do see it as long as they can make it work, and then that will kind of resolve the problem. But it just feels as though there has to be a degree of understanding, I think, and really I hope FIFA enforce the December the 8th, although I'm not sure that they will, because I don't think they can at this point. But I think it would have been better if, you know, if we could turn back the clock and just say, well, actually, you know, lads, it's December the 8th, you've got to release your players by then, you know, or else. And that's the law. But I think because it's from December the 8th, I think that the last sort of deadline, if you like, the latest they can release players is the date that Paris are doing. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I've got sympathy for the clubs, and I have sympathy for the players as well. And I appreciate it's not perfect, but it feels like this could have been better managed, I think.
Yeah, I can see where this is going, because Paris are not going to be the only one who want to hold on to their players for as long as possible. And if they get it, then everyone will demand it as well. So there are friendlies being arranged before the tournament, and it's likely that they may not actually go ahead, which is a bit rotten, really, as prep goes for the tournament. Now, French football is actually taking, not actually a pause, but a bit of a pause. It's a broken pause over the tournament, because historically they have provided so many players for the tournament. Usually it's over a third of the players at an AFCON will play their football in France. It's probably why Sunderland have been affected so much by it, with their links to France as well, and the fact that that's their flow of talent coming through to the club. So, yeah, in Ligue 1, they are playing after the 14th of December. they've only got one round of fixtures, and that's after New Year's. And then the next round of fixtures is on the same weekend as the final. So I think they're trying to mitigate that as much as possible. They do have two rounds of the Coupe de France in there as well. Obviously, the third round of the FA Cup is in the middle of the Cup of Nations as well. So I don't know, Jan, do you think that this year you can just let the Cup go, let that be something that other people get involved with?
This season was about survival. It's just about staying up. We've got a long way to go. We've done very well, but I don't care about how well we do in anything other than just staying up and beating Newcastle twice, convincingly, obviously.
Yeah, on the 14th of December.
Yeah, with half a team. Yeah.
Terry, at least Mo Salah will be nice and rested for the tournament. Liverpool seem to be quite happy for him not to be first choice at the moment.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? Because obviously, as I'm sure listeners are aware, because it was everywhere, he was benched for the West Ham game. And I think it was Gakpo who kind of took his place. But again, there's this whole thing about where Salah is most comfortable. And I think it's probably good anyway, because there seems to be this whole thing about, like, he's a difficult guy to drop, Mo Salah. He doesn't like being dropped, but he would have had to have missed out on games anyway. And with the team in such bad form, this probably seemed like an opportune moment to say, well, look, actually, fellow, why don't you sit this one out? So I don't think that they will actually miss him that much. And I think it will give Liverpool the opportunity to sample life without him, or at least maybe without him being a first choice player and a starter. So it might work to Liverpool's advantage ever so slightly as well, help them deal with a particularly difficult dressing room problem.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe when he comes back with a AFCON winner's medal around his neck, it'll just give him some impetus for the final 3 or 4 months of the season.
It's strange, isn't it, that a player that is not performing in a team that is not performing is deemed to be undroppable. I know, because it's Mo Salah, and he has been brilliant, it does make that a difficult decision, but he isn't brilliant at the moment, and it's only about what you can do on the pitch at that time. Slot needs to find a solution quickly. I thought it was the right decision to bench him. I think clubs get held hostage by their own perception of players being undroppable and we can't cope without him. And sometimes you just need to move on. Because in hindsight, it looks like the decision to give him an extra contract was the wrong one. Of course, no one knew that at the time. He played very well in a championship winning season last year. But whether he'll still be at the club this time next year, I don't know. If his form continues like this,
I think someone knew it at the time, didn't they? Because they took their time giving him his contract for extension, which suggests that perhaps somebody there said, well, look, I don't know whether or not we should do this. With the form that Liverpool were in being what it was, you know, it did probably make Slot's job a little bit easier to go, look, I need to make some changes here, because apart from anything else, if I don't, I'm going to get sacked. It's like, you know, you may love Salah, but I think he loves his job more. So he doesn't want to be the guy who wins the trophy and then gets fired before Christmas. I don't know whether that would have actually happened, to be fair. But he's bought himself a little bit of time. I mean, let's not get carried away. It is, after all, only West Ham. There's no corners been turned yet. But it was an interesting little wrinkle. And given that AFCON is around the corner, it plays into things quite nicely. I mean, of course, Salah, as you can imagine, as we all, I'm sure, know, he's a national hero. He's an institution in Egypt, and he's the beating heart of the side. He has a different kind of role for Egypt. He's almost like the president of Egypt, really, isn't he, at this point? And yeah, it'd be interesting to see whether or not he actually can galvanise that team to a win. I mean, my money's on the hosts, personally, but I'm not betting on the AFCON, by the way. But if I were, my money would be on the hosts. But anyway, that's another conversation.
Yeah, Morocco are the best ranked team in Africa. They are also hosts. So yeah, I think the smart money would be on them. But hopefully we'll get some news in the next week or so that says that, it's on an available broadcaster as well here in the UK. And so we can all settle down and watch it. 4 games a day over the Christmas period, but not Christmas Day. Not Christmas Day. Christmas Eve. 4 games on Christmas Eve. 4 games on Boxing Day. That sounds brilliant, doesn't it?
It does.
If it's not on, there's every chance AFCON will just whack it up on YouTube, because that seems to be the thing these days.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
If they've not sold the rights to it, they'll just whack it up on their YouTube, a hastily constructed YouTube channel. And that'll be great too.
But hey, we've got football to be watching this weekend first, haven't we? And actually, we've got two draws to watch as well, because we've got the aforementioned World Cup draw, the real thing this time. And at the end of the weekend, we've got the third round, the FA Cup third round draw, because it is FA Cup second round weekend. And that's what's going to be filling up most of the weekend box set. We're going to be covering three games from this round. We start off on Friday with Salford City versus Leyton Orient. On Saturday, we'll have Sutton United versus Shrewsbury Town. And on Sunday, it'll be Blackpool versus Carlisle United. We've got some other games peppered around there as well, including the MLS Cup final between Inter Miami and Vancouver, which I'm sure everyone in FIFA will be ligging around on a Saturday evening. And if you want to see what we think about those games, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe. Subscribe to our Substack, and it'll be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFillon, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football. Or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now! I'm going to talk about the weekend's football, just so Terry can moan and sulk and throw his toys out of his pram.
I'm not going to do any of those things.
Come on, please. Come on, let's get it interesting for the listeners.
I'm not sure what even I'm capable of. I don't know. I think I am, actually, aren't I?
Yes.
Or I'd go the full Duff Ellen, that's the thing, because I've been around a lot longer than that cunt. Sorry. I don't think he's a cunt at all. He's probably a very nice man. He just acts like a cunt.